What draws you to the National Constitution Center? You teach at GW now, so why make this move?
I am thrilled to be here at the National Constitution Center. The great passion of my life as a teacher and a journalist has been promoting constitutional conversations, convening students and citizens and all sorts of people to debate issues in constitutional, not political terms, and then have them make up their own minds. And the National Constitution Center is the one place in America that is uniquely situated to host these kinds of debates. We can bring together people from the left and the right, judges and citizens and scholars, who can present the best arguments on both sides of any constitutional issue, and then leave it up to the audience of citizens to make up their own minds. And I want to host these debates not only here at the center in our beautiful museum of We the People, right on the mall here, but also on radio and on the web and on TV. As debates about constitutionalism become increasingly global, I would love to bring people from around the world to debate these questions. And when people in the Middle East are debating the virtues of constitutionalism, we can bring together both sides from a contested debate, uniting judges and police officers and legislators and all sorts of people. So I can't think of any institution that I'd rather be leading, because I think that having conversations about the Constitution is the highest privilege of citizenship. It's the thing that is most fulfilling when we can transcend our partisan feelings. And this is such a polarized age in America. There's plenty of talk, and you can get political views on the left and the right easily if that's your thing. But there's not a lot of places. In fact, I think we may be one of the only places where citizens can set aside their partisan differences and really converge to hear constitutional arguments. And that's what I'm looking forward to doing here.
When you have a populace that is not necessarily educated in civic affairs, and combined with mass media that is throwing around a lot of terms without necessarily explaining all the nuances or really giving accurate information about rights and processes and sort of distinguishing all the tricky elements of the Constitution, you end up with some people who are disaffected and don't participate. And then other people who participate, but only after they've attached themselves passionately to a position. So how do you stimulate thoughtful discourse in this day and age?
Whenever I have a hard constitutional question, I ask myself a simple question. WWBD, what would Brandeis do? Louis Brandeis, Justice Louis Brandeis, is my constitutional hero. And he was so convinced that one of the highest duties of citizenship is engaged participation. But he also insisted on the importance of civic education. He thought that all of us have an obligation to educate ourselves so that we know enough about the Constitution and its text and history to be able to make informed arguments. The Constitution Center has three missions, really all of which I think converge into one. We are the Museum of We the People, we are America's Town Hall, and we're a center for civic education. But really what unites all of those three missions is the idea of constitutional education. That's what we're supposed to do in every form and every way possible. So you're absolutely right that we can't have the kind of thoughtful debates that you and I have been talking about without helping citizens have the resources to inform themselves about these issues. And I can insist at the beginning of any constitutional conversation that we need to debate things in constitutional terms, not political terms, because people disagree about politics. And that can mean reading the Constitution. And I thought it was a great thing when members of the Tea Party marched on the Washington Mall waving copies of the Constitution, and when members of Occupy Wall Street on the other side did the same thing. So we can pull out our pocket constitutions. I have mine here, and I'm so glad that you brought yours as well, both from the bicentennial, I should add, so that was a good time for pocket constitutions. And we can take the text of the Fourth Amendment and read it and remind ourselves that it says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And we can start having a discussion about that even without a huge amount of preparation. In fact, in preparation for this job, I've started having constitutional conversations around the dinner table with my six-year-old twin boys. And you can read the text of the Fourth Amendment and ask them whether they think that drone cameras that follow you 24/7 in public spaces are an unreasonable search of their persons or electronic effects. And they have strong views, and they often disagree. So I think at any level, citizens can engage with the text of the Constitution, but it's certainly true that we need to, in addition to just being a platform for debate, be first and foremost a center for education. a place of resources, of web links. Our bookstores should have wonderful books that will introduce people to constitutional arguments. But one thing I want to insist on, I teach law and I love teaching law students, but you do not have to be a lawyer to engage with the text of the Constitution. It's both our privilege and really, Brandeis would say, our duty as citizens to engage with the meaning of the text. I came in this morning and just before coming into the building, saw a school group outside just laughing and talking, and they seemed to be excited. And I walked up to some of them and asked them what they liked best about the exhibition. And one young woman said she loved Signers Hall, and another said she loved learning that one of the signers had had to have his leg removed. And other people liked the fact that you can push buttons. But that made me realize why I'm so excited about this job. I mean, just seeing young people having come from the process of engaging with the Constitution, I can't imagine anything better.
It's interesting because on the one hand, having this dual role as a museum and as a public forum may be difficult to make that connection. Do you think having this museum part, although sometimes it's difficult to connect it to the constitutional principles, it's a way of personalizing the issues in a way that can reach people of all ages and educational levels?
Absolutely. You have to tell stories in order to engage people. And the Constitution is about stories. And that's what's so inspired about Signers Hall, actually seeing physical statues of the people who signed the document, learning about their stories, and seeing which stories are more compelling than others. I learned that Ben Franklin is unofficially considered one of the most popular signers because he's rubbed off more than the others. People like to pat him and make sure to connect with him in a certain way. And that's just great. And I don't see, I think you stated very well, but there's no inconsistency between the town hall and the museum component. This is, it's an education center that includes this series of opportunities for storytelling about the Constitution. And we'll do that physically in our exhibitions. We'll do that with movies. You do that in books. I'm writing a book about William Howard Taft, who was Chief Justice of the United States. And what my kids remember about him is that he was really large and had to have a specially oversized bathtub put in the White House. And that's great. I mean, there's no inconsistency between that and teaching about the Constitution. We need to tell stories that will connect to citizens. And that's what we're going to do here in the museum.
Especially if you want people to be thoughtful and open their minds, not just come in with one opinion and go out with the same one.
That's the sweet spot. That's my happiest moments as a teacher of the Constitution are when people change their mind. I love taking little polls before and after a constitutional debate. And after we have the discussion, I'll ask, did anyone change their mind? And then you can ask, is there anyone for whom your political and your constitutional conclusions diverge? In other words, you're reaching a conclusion about the Constitution that doesn't coincide with your political opinions. And there are always a few people who do that, and that's beautiful. That's when you know that you're being true to your highest ideals.
Can you give a concrete example about that, the difference between a political position and a constitutional position?
Sure. There are so many. I mean, I just taught, the semester ended at my law school a few weeks ago, and we had a discussion of the healthcare decisions from last year. And at the end, I asked, okay, who believes that the mandate was constitutional but was a really bad idea? And some people did. And who believes that it was unconstitutional but thought that it was a good idea as a policy matter? The same thing about abortion. There were very distinguished liberal constitutional scholars from the 1970s who were very fervently pro-choice as a personal matter but thought that Roe v. Wade was not convincing as a constitutional matter. Same with Bush v. Gore. There are distinguished conservative scholars who thought that President Bush should have been the president but didn't think the decision was constitutionally convincing. And then other famous examples, Justice Scalia always gives the example. He says, I let people burn flags. Scalia says, I'm obviously don't like these crazy hippies who burn flags. I'm a conservative guy, but I strongly believe that the First Amendment protects their right to engage in political protest. And that's just a great thing. That's when you're really being bound by your constitutional ideals.
Will the Constitution Center tap into people's interest in arts and culture to stimulate an interest and discussion in the constitutional issues that may be woven through these things that people care about and are part of their daily lives, but they may not realize the constitutional implications?
I think that in addition to every political issue raising constitutional dimensions, it's also true that many cultural issues do as well. Both questions of funding for the arts, which raise strong First Amendment questions, but also some of the most fascinating issues today involve the future of intellectual property and copyright and creativity and the question of how people can be paid to create music, the future of orchestras and garage bands, and what the economic model for that sort of music is deeply connected to what sort of copyright and patent arrangement we have in this country, which raises constitutional dimensions. And just more broadly, you think about the framers, and they were so liberal-minded, you know, in the small L sense of being deeply cultured. They were immersed both in natural law and natural rights theory, but also they read literature. And John Adams said that he would study law so that his children would be free to study poetry. And I think that that is the kind of thinking that we want to encourage, that just by encouraging citizens to treasure the past and to engage with our heritage in the past and present is part of this great constitutional conversation. So I want to define it as broadly as possible.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.